Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 19 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. And it is great to be back. I am sorry we skipped an episode in April. I did record one, but we had some technical difficulties and so we couldn't use it. But this month, we are back with a bang and we have a fabulous interview with the one and only Georgia Beers, who was the first lesbian author I ever came across. So, and I've read every single one of her books. So I was very excited to have her on the show, and you can hear that terrific interview in a few moments. But before we get to that, we're going to see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what I've been up to over the last few weeks or couple of months since we last spoke. First up, the Amazon charts, and this month sees a familiar face at the top of the US charts and also top five in the UK. It's Eliza Lenski with the final installment of her Winter Jacket series. And as the cover says, it all started with a broken radiator. I think it says that. but yeah, this series is proved hugely popular. And Eliza is a fantastic writer, and she was my guest on episode 8 of the podcast, if you want to go back and listen to that. She was terrific on that. And if you're a fan of this series, rush out and buy it today. Yes, it's book 4 of the Winter Jacket series, and it is the final one. Also doing well, stateside and over here, is T.B. Markinson's The Chosen One, which is about a college romance across the class divide. And who doesn't love a class divide story? It's endearing, it's enduring and endearing, because they work, right? You got the rich girl, you've got the other girl who's on the breadline, and the topic is the will they, won't they. It's endlessly popular. So yeah, that's The Chosen One. And that one's also got a cover that will make you go cross-eyed, but in a good way. So have a look, see what you think. Lydia Rose is also scoring big on both sides of the pond with her novel Something Real, which is another tale of love across the class divide. You know, it works. This time, a CEO and her assistant. And who doesn't love the push and pull of a power play as well? And who doesn't love an office romance? So, yeah, that one is going down well. Miranda McLeod has followed up her very popular Telling Lies Online with another winner entitled A Road Through the Mountains. Now, A Road Through Mountains, I'm sure, has got a great story. I actually read Telling Lies Online and I really enjoyed that. So, and clearly this one is doing the business too. So well done, Miranda. And finally in the US, J.A. Armstrong's Building Blocks is riding high, and that is book 7 in her By Design series. Now, as I've said before on most episodes of this podcast, because J.A. Armstrong's books are always in the charts, and the woman is a machine, the rate she turns out the book, so hats off to her. And I will be actually getting her on the podcast in a couple of months. I was just firming that up today, so very excited about that. Also still in the top 10 in the US is Catherine Ryan Hyde's The Language of Hoofbeats. And if you are a regular listener, you will know that I've been saying I'm going to read this for, I don't know, like probably since the start of the year. It was a goal. It was one of my New Year goals. And listener, I have cracked it. Yay for me. So, yeah, I read The Language of Hoofbeats. And if you haven't read it yet, I highly recommend it. It's a cracker. It's not a lesbian romance, it's a lesbian fiction novel, and it's a story of a couple who foster kids and they move to a new area, and it's as much a story about their children as it is about them, and all the different relationships and how they all interweave. It's really a touching family drama, and it's full of emotion and frankly some really beautiful writing. I loved it, so I can't recommend it enough. So well done, Catherine Ryan Hyde. And I think she has something close to like 1,000 reviews on US Amazon. So I'm not the only one who loves it. Plenty of people do. So that's the charts. And what have I been up to since we last spoke? Well, basically lots of writing. Yeah, I've cracked, I think I worked out by the time I finish my next All I Want book, I'll have written 150,000 words this year, which is what I did the whole of last year. So I've condensed, I've up my speed. So that's really cool. That, as well as lots of writing, I've also been going to family weddings and parties, it seems, endlessly. May is a great wedding and party month, and I've been eating and drinking a lot, but in between that, lots of writing. And I put out the box set of my All I Want series in April, and that contains the first three books in the All I Want series: All I Want for Christmas, All I Want for Valentine's, and All I Want for Spring. And I've also put that out in print, so Valentine's and Spring were only ebook prior to this. So if you were waiting for the print book, grab it now. And next up for me, next up, my next release is Nothing to Lose. And that is a 90% nailed on title. It might change, but 90% nailed down. And that has just gone to my early readers and is set to come out in June, probably the middle of the month. And I'm really excited about this. I've really loved writing it. And it's based around the floods that happened in the UK over last Christmas. Basically, I was reading a lot of the stories, and there was a lot of human stories coming out of them, of like the loss and what it meant to people. And I thought, you know what, that would make a great setting for a romance, and like a kind of redemption story. So that's what I did. So I did a lot of research into the flood, and I'm really excited about it. So, yeah, that's coming out in June. So lots going on with me. And now we've come to summer, and I'll be starting All I Want for Summer this week too. But the sunshine is calling outside my window, and it's getting harder and harder to resist its pull. But I'm going to keep my bum in the chair and keep writing. Anyway, enough about me. Next up, we have my interview with the utterly fantastic Georgia Beers. So I hope you enjoy. Joining me today is US author Georgia Beers, who's been writing lesbian fiction for a fair few years now and has amassed a mighty impressive back catalogue in the process. This year is going to release a new puppy love romance, the first book being Rescued Heart, and I'm sure there are more to come which Georgia can tell us all about. Georgia lives in New York State with her wife Bonnie and is partial to a good glass of wine. Welcome, Georgia.
Hi there, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really great to have you. What have you been up to today? I know it's lunchtime there thus far, so up to anything exciting?
Is it lunchtime? Because I forgot to eat. You're right, it is. I better eat some lunch.
You should eat some lunch.
What have I done today? Well, it's finally a lovely spring morning, which I don't know if it's been this way where you are, but the spring has really taken its time getting here. And though we had a very mild winter, it has stayed pretty chilly here for a long time, longer than usual. So today is lovely. The sun is shining. It's warm. I took my dogs for a walk. I should be writing, but, you know, there's other things to do.
You've got to live your life as well, you know.
Well, you do, but you also need to have a little bit of discipline.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, you can afford to take maybe a morning off and spend some time with your dogs, seeing as though they are, you know, featuring very prominently in your fiction right now, right?
They are, it's true.
Yeah. So tell me, paint a picture of where you're speaking to me from today. Are you in your office or?
I am in my office. Let's see. My office is messy. It's an upstairs bedroom in my house. And I have to be where I can see out a window, because there's a lot, as you know, there's a lot of staring that happens when you're writing a book. You just kind of stare off into space. Mm-hmm. So I have something to look at while I'm staring.
Right.
I have
okay.
A lot of plants in my office. I have a lot of books in my office. It's brown right now. The wall colors are kind of it looks like melted chocolate ice cream to me.
Okay.
But I'm thinking of changing the color.
Right.
I think I need something a little brighter.
Yeah, maybe vanilla.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I love it. I love being in here. Very conducive to creativity to me.
Cool. So tell me a little bit about your writing journey and how you got started.
Well, it's been so long now, Claire. You're asking me to go way back in time. You're taxing my brain. I remember that I was reading lesbian fiction. This was probably 16 years ago. I read a book. I don't remember what it was to this day, but I remember that it was awful. And I finished it, and I was so angry that it was so poorly written. And I threw it on the bed, and I said to my wife, I can do better than this. And she said, well, what's the difference between you and the person who wrote that book? And the answer, obviously, is that that person wrote a book.
So
I decided right then I was going to give it a shot. And I actually kind of came in on the ground floor when a lot of the lesbian presses were first starting up. So I was able to catch somebody's eye, get them to read my stuff. I got lucky. They accepted my first manuscript, and it's just been, you know, cruising along ever since.
Cool. So how long ago was that when you got your first one done?
My first book was published in 2000, so almost 16 years ago, which pains me to say.
But, you know, I said to you before the interview, I was very excited to get you on because you were the first lesbian author I ever read.
Wow.
I know.
Happy.
and I didn't throw your book across the room and say that's terrible. I thought this is a great book. Yeah.
It's a relief.
And I've read every single book you've released. So it's great to have you on. And you were a great inspiration to me to you know, I remember thinking when I was reading your books and other people's books, these are all really great, but I'd love to have something based in the UK, which is why I started writing. And so I read your most recent work in preparation for this interview, Rescued Heart, the first in the Puppy Love series, and I really loved it. And I love the character of Ashley especially. She's terrific. So tell me a little bit about the series and why you started writing this series.
Well, I try to pay attention to, and I'm going to say trends, which makes it sound a little hokey, but I mean, every business has trends. Mm-hmm. And I think that along with the fact that what we do is creative, it's also a business, and you need to pay attention to what's working and what's hot and what's new.
Yep.
And so I try to pay attention to that stuff. And currently, right now, in the romance market, series have been pretty successful and pretty trendy for several years now. So I've, in the back of my mind, I've been toying with doing a series, and I finally decided it was time. I thought setting it around an animal shelter, since my audience is, you know, 99% lesbians, would be a really smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of lesbian friends who don't have some sort of an animal. So I just, there's a humane society here in Rochester that I didn't base it on, but I used it as background information for myself, as I've been there many times, and just sort of ran with it. And it's been so much fun. I wasn't sure if I would like it or not. I just finished up the second one that's in editing right now, and I've begun the third one, though I'm not very far in.
Okay, so what's the second one called?
The second one is called Run to You.
And that's coming out soon, is it? That's out?
Yes, by mid-July.
Right, okay. And who does that follow? Is there a character from Rescued Heart in that?
Yes, yeah. It follows Catherine, the accountant.
Okay, yeah. I could see you setting them all up in the first one.
That's been interesting thing to learn how to do, is to give a little bit but not give too much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So and have you enjoyed so you said you've enjoyed it, because obviously you've got the world already built there, so you can go back to them. So has that been a good experience?
It has. I've been pretty good about keeping a list. I have like an Excel spreadsheet of all of the characters so that I can remember not only who they are but what they look like. Mm-hmm. What their jobs are at the animal shelter, because, you know, by the time I'm into the third book and I have to talk to somebody who was in the first book, I can't remember what they looked like.
Yeah.
I don't know what their name was. I know there was a guy, but I don't know anything. I gotta go back to my notes and take a look, so that's been new for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty solidified setting in my head, so I can see it pretty well. It's really just a matter of keeping track of those small details, because readers are very smart.
Yep.
And they're going to catch mistakes like that, so yeah. I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm in the middle of writing a series at the moment as well, so I've done the same thing.
Do you like it? Do you enjoy the series or not?
Yeah, no, I am, definitely. I'm doing it over a year, so I've got another three to do. So, yeah, no, it's a good experience, but like you say, it's a bit different.
It's definitely different.
And have you ever done a sequel to any of your books? That's one thing I was just thinking.
I have not, and I've had people request them, and that's why I was concerned about whether or not I would be able to do the series, because generally for me, I have learned that once I am finished with a story, I'm done with those characters.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I actually brought some old characters back in for like a cameo in a couple of books ago, and that was new for me. It's done all the time. In mainstream romance, people do it all the time. They bring, you know, this couple from two books ago, they're in the coffee shop when the current couple is having coffee. So it's like a nice little shout out to earlier readers, but for the most part, I don't really have a desire to do a sequel, and I don't know that a lot of romances are conducive to sequels. I mean, the suspense in a romance is the how are they going to get together, and then at the end of the romance, they're together. And so now I feel like we should just let them go on their merry way and move on to somebody new. That's just my opinion, but...
Yeah, okay. So there are no books that you're thinking about going back and revisiting them?
Well, I wouldn't say never.
Yeah.
But I think about it. It's just not... It hasn't grabbed me yet, let's put it that way.
No.
If it grabs me by the hair, then I'll be like, all right, fine, let's do this.
Yeah. Now, I know that Kylie Gretchen, where you're talking about, right, made a cameo in Little Bit of Spice, and I saw the explosion of happiness on the on social media.
I'm surprised by that.
I don't think you should be, because I've heard you say before that Too Close to Touch and Starting from Scratch are your two most popular books. Is that still the case?
Yes.
And so what do you think it is about those romances that people really connect to?
I have rolled that around in my head over and over, and all I can come up with is that they're very traditional romances, and I think you can try new things, and you can do gimmicks, and you can, you know, shake things up a little bit, and all of that is fine, and all of that works, but when it all comes down to it, people like a traditional romance. That's all I can come up with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but that's what it's boiled down to for me.
Yeah, because they're quite different books, aren't they? But
did
you feel any different when you were writing them?
I did, actually. They both were written very quickly. They both like just came out really fast.
Okay, so you really connected to the characters and the story.
I think I must have. I didn't think about it at the time, but when I look back now, I remember that Too Close to Touch was like a snap of the fingers, and I had it all laid out, which doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
And then the same thing happened again with Starting from Scratch, which was several years later. So I would like that to happen every time.
Yeah, wouldn't
but
we?
It's not.
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it? So I guess that came over to the readers, right?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And your previous book to Rescued Heart was A Little Bit of Spice, and that focused on a woman who ran a craft beer factory. Now, you're a famed lover of wine, and wine features prominently in most of your books. But you said that you had to teach yourself to love beer. So is Beers a beer fan? How did that work out?
No, I would say no. I would say that there is beer that I can tolerate, and there are a few, very few small beers that I like a lot. I don't love beer, though. I wish I did. It's just not... Beer and coffee, they're just not flavors that I don't even know why. I don't know why. Are they both kind of bitter? Maybe it's a bitter thing.
Mm.
I can drink coffee, but I need to have a ton of sugar and a ton of cream in it.
Okay. Yeah.
So the beers that I have found that I like are the ones that lean more towards being fruity. I mean, people who really like beer would laugh at the beer that I like.
Right. Yeah. Fruit beers.
So,
not for me.
I drank a lot of it in research for that book.
Yeah. Oh, that's a shame. It's a shame that Beers isn't a beer fan, isn't it?
No, but, you know, isn't that just ironic?
You can't have everything in life, can you?
No.
And of your other books, I particularly loved Fresh Tracks when I read it, because it was a bit different from a straight-up romance, the story of a group of friends who go away. Was it a New Year? Was that New Year?
Yes.
So have you got any more of those kind of books planned, sort of non-standard, I suppose, or romances?
To me out of nowhere, so it doesn't mean that tomorrow at this time I won't have one like that.
Yeah.
At this point in time, I've grown to focus more on one couple at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think about Fresh Tracks, I liked that whole, it was like, it played like a movie to me where there were a whole bunch of different things going on, so I would probably do that again down the road.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And similarly, you had a book called Slices of Life, which was again different. That was like a bunch of short stories, but all interlinked, right? About people in one town. So what inspired that?
I was thinking one day about, I used to work in an office, a sales office, and, you know, you have the same people that you see every day. It was the same mailman, and it was the same UPS delivery person, and it was the same... next door was the same person in the pizzeria, and I just thought about, and I don't know what made me think about it at that particular time, but I thought about all of the people that you see every day,
mm-hmm.
that you know nothing about. And so I wrote a list of all of the service people or doctors or anything that you could possibly run into on a given day. You go to work and you see these people and you stop for gas and you see this person and you have a doctor's appointment and so you see the nurse and you see the PA and you see the physician. And I just made a list of all of these people and then thought, okay, what would be, how conceivable would it be that somebody that you see every day is gay and you don't know? And I just kind of drew a line from there and ended up connecting 11 people in mm-hmm. one life. You know, mm-hmm. they all affect each other in some way, and it worked out really well.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I love that one, and I think that's one of my wife's favourite ones of yours as well. So, yeah. But, yeah, very clever and very different as well, so I think it was, like, quite refreshing to read that as well. So
I thought it would be easy to write, and it was not.
Oh, no, I would not think that. I'm not very good at short stories. Sorry, go on.
I picked out 11 short stories, no problem. Yeah, that was harder than I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, have you written many other short stories? Or
a few, not very many. I just finished one that's going to be in an anthology later this year, and I have I'm going to call it a suspense series on Amazon that I published myself. It's so far it's 2 short stories because I was toying with writing a little suspense. I don't write a lot of short stories, but I do enjoy them, and I can write them, and I will continue to write them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And the other book that stands out of your catalogue to me is 96 Hours, which is the story of 96 hours after September 11th, when all the planes on the way to New York were diverted, and they ended up in Gander. I can't remember where that was. Where was it? Alaska, was it?
Newfoundland,
right. And what happened to the passengers? So obviously there was a lesbian romance in it, so you based it on a real life event and introduced a lesbian romance, which again was really, really different, and kudos to you for that. And how did you feel sort of writing that and doing all the research for that as well?
Well, the research was really difficult. I had to write a scene where the characters see the news reports for the first time of the planes flying into the towers, and so I made myself watch the news reports. I went to YouTube and I found some of the reports because it had been a while since I'd seen them, and I didn't expect it to be as hard to watch something that I had already seen and already knew what it looked like again. Mm-hmm. But that was difficult. And there were times when I thought, what am I doing trying to set a romance around this horrible tragedy? But I think with the help of my editor and the help of some friends that I talked to, I think it worked out pretty well. I don't know if you know how I came to the story, but I watched a documentary during the Olympics. And it was a documentary about the people of Gander and all of the planes that had been diverted there and how awesome they were, and that they all opened their arms to all of these strangers who were suddenly stranded. And in this documentary, there was like a gentleman from England who flew to Texas a lot on business, and a woman who lives in Texas who was coming home from her vacation from England, and they ended up stuck together and ended up getting married. And my wife looked at me when we were watching this and said, what a great setting for a romance. And so I just kind of rolled it around for a while and decided to give it a whirl, and it came out better than I thought it was going to.
Right, okay, no, I didn't know that, so that's really interesting to find out. Yeah, I mean, no, it's really so different, again, so that, yeah, that's what I really enjoyed about it, and obviously very well written as well. So.
Thank you.
So, and as we were talking about earlier, I mean, like music, people remember where they were when they read a book, but musicians and writers also remember what they felt like when they wrote that album or book. So do you have a favourite that you loved when you were writing it, or one that you've grown to love since? Looking back, you might have thought, oh my God, this is awful when I'm writing it, but now you think, hey, it's not so bad.
I think I have a lot of that, actually. I think my second book, Thy Neighbor's Wife, is my least favourite book of all of my books, and that's because I rewrote the entire thing. I wrote it in first person initially.
Right.
And each chapter switched back and forth, and it just didn't work. I wrote the entire book that way, and I realized with the help of my editor at the time that just was not the way it was going to work. And just for giggles, I rewrote the first chapter from third person, and it was so much better, and I just sat there looking at it thinking, oh, crap, now I have to rewrite this whole thing.
Yeah.
So people tell me, you know, oh, I love Thy Neighbor's Wife, and I'm like, I don't even want to talk about it. Thank you for loving it. I can't even. Starting from scratch, I think, has a really special place for me. And I remember when I was writing it, I was kind of channeling my relationship with my grandmother at the time to write about Avery's relationship with her grandma. And in the book, which is not really a spoiler, but Avery's grandmother passes away, and my grandmother was still alive at the time. And since then, my grandmother has passed away, and I, the same feelings, the same, everything was the same for me. And so I look back at that book, and I'm like, okay, I did a good job with that one, because that's exactly what happens.
Cool.
Rescued Heart was difficult. That was another very difficult edit. And it went one way, and then when we edited it, we went a different way, and it's much better now. So there are books that I remember fondly, and there are books that I remember were really, really a lot of work. I mean, they all have, you know, you have, you're a writer. They all have different memories for me, some good, some bad, a little of both with each book. But those are the standouts for me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but I just think that's interesting to know, because I used to be a music journalist, and I remember interviewing this band that I really liked, and talking to them about this album that I loved, and they all hated it because they were going through this terrible time in their life at the time. And they were all, you
that's
know,
funny.
Nearly killing each other behind the scenes, and they wouldn't talk about it. And I thought, oh, you know, that's really weird. And
everybody differently. Everybody's got different memories of things.
Exactly. Yeah. And now I'm writing books. I understand. So yeah.
Yep.
So looking back, as you say, you've been writing now for 16 years, and do you still feel the same passion for it as you did at the start, or is it more now?
It's more, actually. There's the whole being grateful, because I do this for a living, and I can pay my bills, and I am my own boss, and I sit in my house all day, and I don't have to leave if I don't want to, because I'm an introvert, and that's a wonderful thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I've also grown, I think, as a writer, in that I look at it as a business also. I mean, yes, it's a passion. It's creativity. It's something I love to do, and I'm very blessed to be able to do it. It's also a business, and I'm able to click that switch in my brain and focus on that part of it as well. So I think I've grown and matured in several different ways since I started this.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when did you go full time? Because as you said, you were working in an office, right, for
yep.
when you
about
started?
5 years ago.
Right, okay. So is it that when you started looking at it as a business, when you went full time?
Not really. I didn't start looking at it as a business seriously until like the last probably 2.5 to 3 years. And I don't know why it took me so long to make that change, but I think you have writers who do this as a hobby, and you have writers who do this as a career, and you need to decide which one you are.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So is that why you say your pace, writing pace, has upped over the last couple of years as well?
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And I can. I mean, I think that writers need to challenge themselves. And I can say, well, you know, 1,000 words a day is a good writing day. But if I have the ability to write 2,500 words a day, then I should be shooting for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't hit it every time. It's, you know, and usually if I have a day where I write 3,000 words, then the next day is going to be awful. but I can do it, and I know that I can do it. And I remember the first time that I hit 3,000 words in a day, and it was the same thing. I was like, oh, no, now I have to do this every day.
Yeah.
You realize that, okay. But so I think that it's easy to just sit back and relax a little bit. But if I can write more words a day, that means I can write more books a year, which means I can, you know, keep my readers happy and, frankly, bring in a little more money.
Yep.
I mean, we're not doing this for free.
No, it's not a dirty word.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No.
So yeah, there's been some adjusting in my head over the past 2 or 3 years.
Okay. And as you say, your readers will be very happy, because as we know, romance readers are voracious readers, and they're just going to want more and more books. So hopefully.
They're wonderful.
Yeah. So that's all good. And for any budding writers out there, have there been times over the last 16 years when you thought, oh my God, what am I doing? You know, should I carry on?
With every single book.
Okay.
Yes. There's always a part in the book where I just think, this is ridiculous. Why do I even think I can do this for a living? What's the matter with me? What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Every time. Yeah. That never stops.
Good. Good to know.
I mean, I understand my own process, and I know that when I'm at X part of the book, I'm going to feel this way, and when I'm at this part of the book, I'm going to feel this way, and then I get to this part of the book, and here's how I feel. And so I know that, and I just have to write it out. That's the only way I can get through it. I'll say to my wife, my wife will come home from work and she'll be like, "Well, how'd you do today?" And I'll say, "Well, I'm in the middle third and I hate this book right now." And she's like, "Okay, well, you know what? Tomorrow it'll be better." And that's really the case. Tomorrow it will be better.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out for the long suffering wives.
Oh my God, right?
Absolutely. And do you have any mantras you use in your writing process? Got any sort of things on the wall that say "keep going" or something like that?
I do. I have a quote from Nora Roberts. Am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
You are. Yeah.
Okay, good. Because her quote says, "My top three pieces of writing advice: stop whining and write, stop fucking around and write, stop making excuses and write." So I try to remember those things and keep my butt in the chair.
Right. Yep.
I'm very easily distracted, and if I get up from this chair and go out into a different room or downstairs, I'm going to get distracted by laundry or shopping or dogs or, God forbid, Netflix. And there's going to be trouble. So yep. I have to put my butt in the chair.
Yep, stay away from the Netflix. So what is your typical writing day? As you say, you can shoot for a certain word count, and it might be better than others, but do you have a certain time you write best?
I tend to write best in the morning. I'm trying to mix it up a little bit and try stretching the day out. I have not tried writing in the evening, but a writer friend of mine says that she writes more in the morning but better in the evening, so I want to give that a try. I tend to get up, I shower, I have breakfast with my wife. I have to get dressed and put on makeup or whatever and make it like I'm going to work. I'm not one of those people who rolls out of the bed in their pajamas, and it's wonderful if people do that. I need to feel like I'm going to work. Otherwise, it makes me feel like I don't have to do the work. I can putter around and do other things. So I get up in the morning. Often we will walk the dogs. We have breakfast together. I shower, I get dressed, I sit down at my desk, and I work until lunch. I tend to write in spurts. Like, I'm not one of those people who can write for 8, 10, 12 hours a day. I can't write through the night. I wish I could. I don't know how people do that. But I break it up into little, hourly chunks, and I'm usually done by 3, 3:30 in the afternoon, especially if I've written a lot. My brain is fried at that point.
Yeah.
I would say I shoot for 2,000 to 2,500 words a day, and sometimes I'm a little under, and sometimes I'm a little over, and sometimes it's a miserable failure, but that's my goal.
But there's always tomorrow, and if you write 10,000 words a week, that's pretty good.
I think so.
Yeah, and do you have a never-ending well of ideas, or is there a bit of a panic going, "Oh my God, what am I going to write next?"
Well, I've ended up in a place where I've got a kind of a backup bucket full of little bits of ideas, so I think I'm okay for a little while. I have two ideas that I actually bumped in order to do this series. So after the series is done, I'm going to be okay for another two books, and then I might have to start brainstorming. But stuff tends to pop up when I don't expect it, so I just write it down and put it in a folder and revisit later. So I've never been in a point where I think, "Oh my God, what am I going to write about next?"
Okay.
I've been lucky so far.
Cool. So Georgia Beers fans, don't need to panic. You're all right until next year at least. Cool. And there are a few big lesbian fiction presses in the world, as you said, that you sort of got on board with one of them in the early years. And you seem to have jumped around quite a few of them. So are you happy being with a press, or have you got any plans to publish independently?
Well, I am currently with Brisk Press, and what I like about that is it's pretty autonomous. They take care of the printing and the technical stuff for me, but I find my own editor, I hire my own cover artist.
Oh, okay.
I have the final say. So
right.
I'm one step removed from being self-published, and it's worked really, really well for me.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Oh, right. I didn't realize that. So you almost are. Yeah. But yeah, no, terrific. Because, I think indie publishing is the way to go, obviously. But,
it's huge right now. It really is.
Yeah.
Is.
Absolutely, it's a revolution. So yeah, vive la revolution and all that. And as we said, the lesbian landscape looks very different since you first published in 2000. And what do you think of the explosion, which has been fueled by independent publishing?
I think it has its pros and its cons, and I think that there is more positive than negative, definitely. I mean, anything that offers you more product can't possibly be negative. I do think that we're going to go through a period of time where people have to learn that they still need to edit. Mm-hmm. You can't write a book, throw it up on Amazon, and not expect people to complain that your work is unedited. I'm finding that a lot of self-published authors think that skipping that step is okay. Mm-hmm. And I get it, it's expensive, I understand, but it's so worth it, because what you don't want is somebody to, you know, grab Claire's book and look at it and the editing is awful or non-existent, and then they say, well, I'm never buying another book of hers again. That's the last thing you want.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So people need to learn that there are steps involved. Otherwise, there is so much crap for readers to sift through. That's just unfair.
Yeah. No, I'm totally in agreement there. Get a professional cover and professional editing.
And your friend, the English teacher, is not an editor. Your friend, the English teacher, as a proofreader, that's fine. You still need an editor.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And are you still an avid reader of Lesvic?
I am. I don't read as often as I should. Especially with summer coming, I've been so busy. But I have a little pile, and I do my best to get to as much romance as I can. And I'm reading some mainstream romance as well. I want to see what's out there. I want to see what's working. I want to see, you know, well, I like the way this person writes. I didn't like this particular style. Why not? I like to analyze and see what's working and what's not, what's selling and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a combination of pleasure and research, frankly.
Yeah. No, absolutely, yeah. I saw you went to a romance conference recently. That was a mainstream romance conference, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and you seem to have got a lot of ideas from that as well.
I love going to those. I'm going to another one in July. There's just the scope of romance writing in general is so much bigger than we in the lesbian community even realize. I mean, there are so many of us, and there is so much to learn. And the mainstream romance organizations are really making efforts to embrace diversity and LGBT and African American and, you know, different cultures, and it's really been wonderful. And so I think it's important for those of us in these smaller genres to show up at those things and make ourselves visible.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do quite like going along to things like that, because, as you say, you do learn a lot of things, and also it's just, yeah, it's inspirational talking to other people,
yeah,
as well, right. Readers and writers.
I come home from those conferences just so pumped up to get to work.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to mention also your day in the life of a romance writer video, which had me in hysterics. You did that for a GCLS conference, right, a few years ago. So are we going to have any more videos from you? Because, you know, clearly there's a video talent there as well.
You know, it never really occurred to me, but you're not the first person who has said that. So it's worth looking into. I should think about making another one. I've got nothing but wonderful comments about that, and I had so much fun making it.
Yeah, no, you absolutely should. I just love the bit where you start writing the shopping list on the whiteboard. That's my favourite bit.
That's what happens.
And is there a piece of writing advice, like a best piece of writing advice you've ever been given?
Yes. When I was first writing, my friend Mike, who I have known for years and years and years, I'm trying to remember what the context was. I was talking about, oh, I think I told him that maybe I would try writing something different just to see if the audience was different or if I could sell more. And he told me to make sure that I was writing for me and not writing to my audience. And I think he was so right, because if I'm writing for myself, it's very clear in the work, I think, and it's more passionate, and it's I'm happier doing it, which means a better product. If I'm writing something that I don't really care about, because I'm just writing it to write it, then what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
The readers are going to feel that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they feel when you put your heart into the book.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Write it from the heart. And as you
said, so that has stuck with me for many years now.
Okay, cool. And final question, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Oh, man, that is a difficult question. Can I be the love child of one writer?
You can.
Well, I know that the one that I would pick would be Ann Patchett. Just because of the way she strings words together, if I could have an ounce of her writing ability, some of her DNA, and be able to write the way she does, it's not even, I mean, she writes drama.
Right.
And general fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really my go-to, but I picked up a book of hers years ago, The Magician's Assistant, it was called, and I just loved everything about it. And I have since corresponded with her, and I've seen her speak, and I've spent a little time with her, and she's just this crazy smart woman with this wicked sense of humor who is a magician with words. And so if I could have just like a drop of her DNA and mix it in with my own blood and have an eighth of her talent,
yeah,
I would be so happy.
Okay.
So it doesn't really answer your question, but sort of.
It does. No, it does answer my question. And, you know, maybe you can put it to her next time you see her, see what she says.
Maybe she'll give me a vial of her blood or something.
Yeah.
That wouldn't freak me at all.
Yeah.
Would you mind if I just, you know, stuck this needle in your arm?
I think you know, yeah, it would be a novel thing, right? Because, you know, fans ask you different things all the time, so that would be novel.
Exactly, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Beautiful. Well, that is a great way to end the interview, I think. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this, Georgia, and have a great rest of the day.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Yeah, thank you.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. So this is me, your host, Claire Lydon, signing off. I also forgot to ask Georgia where you can find out more about her. So if you want to do that, go to www.georgiabears.com and you can find out all about Georgia and her fantastic books. And if you fancy dipping into any of my books, London Calling, This London Love, The Long Weekend, or the All I Want series, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes or any of the other digital outlets. I am also on Twitter at Claire Lydon, so come on down and follow me there. And I am on Facebook, Claire Lydon Author, and I'm on Instagram at ClaireFic. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It is much appreciated. And make sure you tune in to the Lesbian Lounge with Denise for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip. Join me next time for more hot book club action, where I'll be interviewing US author Jove Bell. See you then.